Welcome to a very, very, very special edition
like
of Quirky
extra,
and Chenille. So special that we didn't even tell you last time because we didn't really know.
No. Don't you love it when magic happens?
We'd been looking to collaborate for a while with some other people. Need to
stop and listen.
Collaborate and listen. It's okay. We're not doing a special on Vanilla Ice. It's okay.
Ice baby.
No. Stop that. Okay. So we have a very special guest star with us today. We have DJ Colin Gaff. Welcome to Quirky and Chenille.
Good evening. Thank you for inviting me. How are you going?
Very, very good. All very good here.
It's weird having somebody ask us how we're doing.
And we're in a new studio too.
We are in a new studio.
Which is also doubles as my wardrobe.
Yeah. You know, you got to make do with what you've got.
Well, exactly. It's all about being creative. Today's special. Today is very special.
We are talking about
an artist. It is a bit of a cateathon. Yeah. It's one of our favourite artists and your probably most favouritest artist like ever.
Absolutely.
Kate Bush.
Yeah, for sure.
Ooh, that's like emphatic.
I know. She does. We talk about using extremes, but she probably would be one of your favourite artists ever.
Absolutely.
If not your very favourite.
No question.
I won't let you make that call right now.
Yeah, you can make that call. Yeah, go for it if you want to.
We should probably
talk about the surname because we just said Cateathon.
I said Kate Bush.
Did you?
We're talking about Kate Bush, everyone.
Kate Bush, right.
Just in case.
Okay.
And I think it's really important that we do mention what is occurring in the Kate Bush world.
Yes. Which is
and why this is occurring.
Which is why
Colin?
I have you in my wardrobe talking about this.
So what is that, Uncle
What's
Colin?
What's happening, Colin?
Well, as you would know, Kate hit the stage in 2014. It's first time since 1979 when she did a tour of life. So
yes.
When she played her nights in London, it was a massive thing globally.
Yeah.
People flew over from all over the world to London to the concerts. I didn't make it.
Okay.
But
how many did you do in the end?
Over 15 to 20.
Wow.
And obviously it was a major production for her, involving, you know, mime, acting, lots of stage decoration and theming.
You wouldn't expect anything less. Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, so it's Friday, 25th of November. I'm delighted to announce she's actually releasing the concert on triple CD. And four pieces of vinyl, if you're that sort of person. And that's really, really special for a lot of people because, you know, you don't get many releases from Kate Bush.
Especially not live ones.
No, that's right. And when something like this comes out, it's a really important thing. A lot of these songs have touched a lot of people globally throughout their lives at different stages of their life. Yeah. And when they're actually being turned into a live thing and in a beautiful produced package, it's a big thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And what would it be called, this thing, if I was looking for it in, say, JB Hi-Fi?
Yeah, so it's Before the Dawn, which was the name of the stage show as well.
There has been a little bit of people upset
because it's not a DVD or Blu-ray. I'm sure that will come at some point, but it's just CD and audio at this point.
So just before Christmas too. So it's a little Christmas present. And next year she could release the DVD and, money stream. She's worked it out. This girl's smart.
Although I don't reckon she does it for the money.
No.
I know.
I agree.
That's one of the many reasons I love her, and we'll get to that.
One of the subjects was actually she doesn't like being seen. She's quite conscious of her persona and likes people just to get it for her voice.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a thing.
I was looking at Kate Bush, the whole story, like the doco, and one of the things she said which really resonated with me was that she says, I'm fascinated by people.
Yeah.
And she sings about, it comes through in all of her songs, she sings about human beings. She doesn't sing about, just
story,
some love thing.
Yeah.
And I think in order to get over her extreme shyness and things, she's another person in a lot of her songs. She's a character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Character. Totally.
Yeah.
And when you're a young child, listening to that music, you visualize and project all these images.
Yeah.
And it's very inspiring, creative. You try and interpret them in your own way. And as an adult, they turn into something else. Quite interesting.
Mm. And fascinatingly enough, that's probably not what she set out to do. As an artist, she actually set out to be true to herself and do stuff that she felt moved her.
Mm.
And as a result of that, which is what I always say, Neil knows I always say this, but I always say that if an artist is true to themselves, then that actually is the most important thing that they need to do.
Absolutely.
Because it'll totally come through in the music.
It will, absolutely.
Yeah, the passion comes through in the end.
It's
really, really funny, actually, over the years now, I've outed so many Kate Bush fans, it's hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. And
how could they not be?
And people don't really talk about it. It's more of a personal thing.
Mm.
And it's amazing how many people actually really, really appreciate her music.
Yeah. Do you think it's personal because the songs touch people at a level that's way deeper than just the music and...
They're in top 40. Yeah, absolutely. And they go long term as well.
Yes,
songs.
They do.
They travel with
They've
them
got endurance,
their life.
Don't they? Because you can listen to some songs now that are like 80s, 70s and they sound like they are. But you listen to Kate Bush and it doesn't. It sounds out of time. Doesn't sound like it's part of a particular era.
Because she didn't try to conform to a norm.
Yeah.
One of the many things I love about Kate Bush... Her songs aren't verse, chorus, key change, chorus, chorus, fade.
Yeah.
Which just described 80% of the songs that have ever made the top 40 in history. Hers are a story. She doesn't care whether she goes somewhere crazy and different and then brings it back down and then sort of repeats a cool little phrase that she does.
Yeah, definitely.
So to her, if it tells the story, she'll do it.
Yeah.
And actually... You know, there's nothing better than someone that just doesn't care if you like it or not.
I think there's nothing sexier
than someone that doesn't want you.
Yeah.
You know, that's not why she does it.
There's
not why she does it.
We weren't expecting to get to that.
I know, the random stuff we come out with after a couple of red wines. But so I'm going to throw this to you, Colin. What do you love about Kate Bush? Why Kate Bush?
It's like three words or something like that, or just you can go for as long as you like.
I think, obviously, I grew up listening to her music by my older sister.
Yep.
So there's a connection at that point. There was a challenge and the visuals thrown at me as a child of about, say, maybe 9, listening to The Dreaming, and it inspired so much. I know it was her most difficult album, but as a child, it was actually made, wow, they visualised. It was like seeing a cartoon in audio, which for me at that age was quite an interesting experience. I'd never seen that before.
Well, The Dreaming too, a lot of people were recounting that it scared the crap out of
me.
Because there's witches and evil
and aboriginals
music as well. Aboriginal stuff.
Which I hadn't experienced before growing up in North London. You don't really get many of that going on.
No, well, again, it wasn't the preconceived pop music
thing. The canned.
That's right. So I love the imagery she projects, the calmness she's given to me over the years, different times. And like you go on a journey with, and you know I've had this conversation with you about journey of music, say with my DJing.
Yeah.
But it's also with listening.
Good segue, we need to learn it.
But listening to her albums, I mean, obviously she does a similar thing with The Ninth Wave, with Ariel. She's done that journey thing.
Mm.
And obviously that sort of drags me in as well. Like it has millions of others of people around the world and their perfection.
Mm.
And yeah, so that's kind
They're perfectly crafted, aren't they? They're almost like a little capsule of just perfection in themselves. So.
And there's bits of it are challenging as well.
Yes.
Like, you know, you go like Waking the Witch was like, whoa. And then the next minute it's all about being trapped under ice and in Ice is on the Ninth Wave, for example.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, at the time you're going, wow, you're a bit challenged. You go, is this an album? Is this supposed to be a pop song album? It's not quite like what I thought.
Yeah.
And actually took me a while to get into the Ninth Wave because, you know, everyone's head is a different space. It took a little while to get used to it. But once you embrace it, it's like a good novel, and that's exactly what I think what she wants, like literature. You embrace it, you explore it, you understand it, and suddenly you've got it, and you go, wow, that's an amazing piece of work.
Yep.
Which is why she references literature a lot, too. But even the words that she writes are really poetic as well.
Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely.
Out of the wily, windy moors, we fall and roll in green. Like it's just like a poem.
And to me as well, like I think it's the whole English eccentricity of it all.
She's very British.
She's very, and the whole, you know, that's obviously...
Which is a good thing.
It's a really good thing, and it's quite nice. Sometimes when I hear that, being living in Australia now even, I just laugh and giggle to myself and think, wow, I kind of miss that little small part of England occasionally.
Oh, sure.
Not often, but occasionally going, oh, it's kind of funny.
So Neil and I talk about like what attracts you to music to start off with.
Yeah.
So is it the lyrics or is it the rhythm? Is it the music? Do you have like a thing that attracts you first? I mean, the other part may come, but is there a part of music, either one of those, that attracts
Normally
you
Normally it's
first?
A melody.
Yeah.
If it's warm to my ears.
Yeah.
The drums and everything can come later, but normally it's the melody.
Yeah.
That's what attracts me in. Yeah, and it also if I'm challenged by it.
Straw poll.
If I'm challenged by it as well. It's going to be a bit challenging.
What if you have to think?
Yeah, I like thinking.
Yeah, okay, awesome.
But then I also, my problem with that though, particularly in this stage of my life, I haven't got time to think sometimes. So when it comes to an album like maybe a Kate Bush album, I really need some quality time with it.
Yeah.
So 50 Words of Snow, for example, her last album, I haven't really warmed to still.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't melted. I haven't melted.
Yeah.
I haven't melted the snow yet.
Yeah.
I bought the single, a light single, which was the one about the wild man. I heard bits of it, but I still have not warmed to it.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. I just haven't got time, quality time with it. Yeah, and I've heard some good things about it, but it hasn't warmed to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm, shame.
Because we talked a few weeks ago about...
I'm just teasing.
Yes.
Aside from the songwriting and her incredible voice, and she never had formal training. She just said, I got better because I liked writing songs.
Yeah.
And I just sang them every day. Yeah. And by singing every day, her voice got better.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
But what we talked about, that Christina and I loved, is that she's an artist.
Yeah.
So it's not just the songs, it's not just the songwriting and the singing, which is incredible enough.
Mm.
It's the production, it's the dance, it's the choreography, it's everything in one package.
Whole package, yeah.
Every outfit, every move is thought about. It's not just, oh, let's just whack something together so we can sell some albums.
Let's just show some boobs.
Well, yeah. No. she definitely doesn't do that.
I know, which is good. You can concentrate on the music then.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons that I really love her too, and you too, that she's a true artist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually does stuff, you know, you were talking before about the dreaming where you say, you know, I really want to do this and I think I need to do this and I don't care if it doesn't make the top 10 list.
Yeah.
It was funny actually when the hit single, well, it was like kind of the only hit single off that album, Sat In Your Lap, came out. Mm. You know, it's insane drums produced on the Fairlight, which was quite a modern way of producing at the time with Peter Gabel, she did it.
Yeah.
And the video clip was mental. Like, you had people, devils with horns. You had Kate, you know, sitting there like a Buddha. You had people on roller skates flipping around her. You had her with the people with white dunce's hat on. It was quite extreme. It was on, like, in the top 40 on Top of the Pops and stuff in the UK. I'm going, what the hell is this? But as a child, it's quite enticing because it's like, it's interactive, kind of cartoon-like to a certain extent. So me and my sister used to do these interpretive dance.
Do you still remember the moves?
Well, we tried to recreate the video clips.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what you did.
As you do, yeah.
As you did then in the
80s. I did that with Bananarama.
I didn't. I'd always dance my own thing.
I'm sorry about that, Neil.
I would always dance my own thing.
So,
I never did
that. As you may remember, though, Sat In Your Lap had some really important parts in it. One of the particular moments in the bit was where it was Kate was sitting like a Buddha.
Yeah.
And then she go like that.
Yep.
I put my hands in the air like that.
Yeah.
And she sort of talked to the video, you know. And at the end of that moment, the dancer, as it went back into the beat, would jump over her head.
Yeah.
But Kate would bow her head down at the same time so the dancer could get over cleanly.
Yeah.
So me and my sister interpret that.
Oh, no.
I can see where this is going. Someone is about to get kicked in the head.
In the back room. By the way, I'm 9 and she's about...
Shirley.
She's about 15. So obviously I'm preparing my run-up because I'm a little
bit...
I'm a little bit younger than her. You know, I need a bit of a run-up.
You're a bit more spry.
A bit more sprightly, but a little bit high.
I am a gazelle.
And she's a teenager, yeah? So she's a bit taller than me. So we're doing the bit where it comes to, you know, well, I'm... just when I'm king, that's when I'm king. And you know, it's a really good song. And then it goes on and gone and on. As Kate Bush is about to go, when I'm king, right?
Yeah.
And it goes, and she bows her head,
yeah.
And it goes beginning, and it goes back into the beat. I'm supposed to run up and jump.
Yes.
So as it's getting to the beat, I'm doing the run up from the lounge, corner lounge, to get a good run up, like
gymnast, proper.
Nice perpendicular angle here.
Nice, yeah. Nice.
Run. About to hit Shirley. She's about to bow her head. Little brother's a little bit faster, Shelly's a bit slow. Not sure what happened. My knee connects with her head. I fly across the lounge floor. Like, really sore. My knee's really sore, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you hit her in the head and your knee was sore.
Yeah. Oh, poor you.
I'm sprawled on the floor. Shirley looks at... Shirley's like... Sparko, her head... She starts bawling her eyes out. Runs out of the room and runs up to the toilet. God. And that was the end of our dancing moments.
That was it. You gave up from there.
No the end.
No more dancing with little brother. We've all got a little bit too old for that moment.
Oh,
but I will never...
Your memories.
I will never ever forget Sat In Your Lap for that moment. Ever. That's why I have Sat In Your Lap by Kate Bush in my memory for the rest of my life. Nice. Anyway, that's my story. We'll move on, guys.
Would it have made the top 40 if it wasn't Kate Bush, if it was some new artist that had just released that?
I doubt it very much.
Yeah.
Although it was a very good song, but you can't really imagine it being played like at a wedding for the dance floor.
Yeah, yeah, was, no, true.
I'm just looking. I do have a list of her discography in front of me. 1982, The Dreaming. So that's, yeah.
But the 80s was a particular era where you could almost do anything and get away with it. So the all of the verses, the types of genres, the different types of music, the kind of a lot of it happening. You could almost pick whatever you kind of felt like you were into. So sure, there was a New Romantics and stuff like that, but there was
Stock Aitken Waterman.
Yeah, there was a whole heap of stuff that was kind of standard, but there was also stuff that wasn't standard, and it felt like a real kind of mixing pot, a real
creative time. Yeah,
yeah, a real mix of lots of different types of music. So, and I think that it would fit in that time. Whether she did it now, is it kind of like a Gautier type of thing? I don't know.
Mm.
It'd be interesting to see, but yeah, it fitted because it was word.
Yeah, I mean the dreaming did obviously fail, but I think because it failed, it made the Hounds of Love such a much amazing, you know, comeback, and it's such a like a perfect album.
Yeah,
I think that's
it's pretty awesome. Hey?
It's just an amazing piece of work.
And that was what the US, because usually in the US your debut album doesn't do that well traditionally. Mm. People, they need to get to know you a bit, and then especially in the '80s.
Yeah.
And Hounds of Love, Running Up That Hill was her first number one in the US, I think.
Yeah.
So then the US embraced her and suddenly her career took off.
Yeah. I was kind of looking at my little list here, and I do have three songs from the Hounds of Love. So that kind of tells you a little bit about, you know, I liked it a lot.
Mm.
Bit of a theme.
So speaking of favourite songs,
given
that Christina and I love to do top whatevers.
Whatever the number is, we feel.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. Or do you want us to go first and then you
go? You go first.
Yeah? Yeah. Okay, so our top three Kate Bush songs and why?
It's super stressful.
I know, it was.
It was almost, I kind of appreciate...
And it depends what mood I'm in and where I am and, yeah.
Yeah, so much.
Yeah, I know.
It made me appreciate how hard that was for you to do November.
Yeah, to do my favourite musicals.
And do your favourite musicals.
Yeah. Jeez, it was hard. Yeah.
Man, it was hard. I'm actually starting to get a little bit stressed. But anyway, so on to my list. So my, do we want to do 3-1?
You know, whatever works. Random. I just do anything. I'm not sure you can rank them above others, except that you've said these are my favourite three. But
all right, okay. So my
in no particular order.
In no particular order, my favourite three are... I actually do have them in order, but anyway. In no particular order, my favourite three are Cloud Busting.
Yep.
Love
Man
it.
Man with a Child in His Eyes.
Love it.
And Wow.
Wow.
Is that okay? Is that like a... Okay or not okay?
I don't think there's going to be...
He's got a tongue thing happening.
I don't think
happening.
There's going to be any song that he goes, oh, no, that's a crap song.
No. Yeah. So how about you,
there are
Neil?
No crap songs.
How about you?
I actually had the Man with the Child in His Eyes is one of mine too. It's just this beautiful, haunting melody. She wrote it when she was 13 years old.
I know. Can you believe it? It's insane.
Because it's such a mature song.
Yeah.
And so relevant now and just... Yeah, I thought super that was incredible.
Success. Yeah.
That's a sign of prodigious talent right there. Right there.
It's in the genes, that one, for sure.
Yep. I think we got to talk about Wuthering Heights.
Of course we do.
I know it's a bit cliche, but it was her breakout song.
Funnily enough, it's not on my whole list because I knew that we were going to talk about it because it is the song that everyone
is the quintessential
with, so
it's
okay.
It's original.
Yeah, and that's it was so completely different to anything that ever come before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, referencing a book that was hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
And all those sorts of things.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, well, if we're going to talk about...
So do you want to talk a little bit about Wuthering Heights? Because I do have a story about Wuthering Heights that I would like to share.
All right, I'll give you my other two and then we'll talk about... We'll talk about Wuthering Heights at the end.
Actually, let's do that. And then we can talk about Cloud Busting as well. And we can
and that means I've got another spot on my list.
Yay!
Running Up That Hill, to me, I just... I love the song. I love the metaphor that is within the song. It can be applied to a lot of things in life. You know, that everybody's stressed, everybody's always running up that hill.
Yeah.
I saw something with an interview with Kate Bush, and she was talking about the fact that, you know, men and women are very different people, and that you can never understand the other one, really, unless you made a deal with God and got him to swap your places. So that sort of appealed to me. And This Woman's Work is the other one, and I just...
Ooh.
The melody...
It is beautiful.
Just haunting, beautiful, you know, not quite Sarah McLachlan depressing.
Thank God.
Although, you know, the whole story and why it was written is that it was written for was incredible as well.
Man,
and the fact that it's also structured very differently to a lot of songs. So, again, just very individual and very Kate Bush.
Yeah, definitely. Do you want to have a go, Colin? I mean, I didn't, you know, talk about in detail the three of my songs, so maybe I need to do that, which might give you a bit more thinking time. Do you need more thinking time?
I might just give you my three. I'm actually going to do it on album tracks particularly. I think we all know about all the other tracks and the top, you know, top 40 tracks. I think it's a nice opportunity just to highlight some of the album tracks that maybe...
God, that was what we were so hoping you would do.
Yes.
Are a bit more important because some of them...
A bit more important. Well, hang on. No, sorry.
I didn't mean they're real important. They haven't maybe not been highlighted as much, but they actually are amazing pieces of work.
Do it.
Yeah.
Oh, I did mention Set in Your Lap, but so I won't mention that one. But on the Dreaming album, The Night of the Swallow...
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really nice Celtic rhythm, uplifting, driving, correct.
Yes.
And being Irish, from an Irish background myself, I always remember listening to it after the first, we're the vinyl, right? So we used to have the Dreaming track on first, which is all heavy Aboriginal, and then you go into The Night of Swallow, which was like a relief after
after
the intensity. And then the Celtic rhythm came in Irish rhythms. And I always remember that being so uplifting and there's a real like whoosh after it.
Wow.
So I think that's a really, really important one to highlight.
Mm.
That's my track number one.
Ooh. Track number two is... Drum roll.
I think I really also want to highlight the closing track on CD2 of Aerial. The track's called Aerial. And it's like a, as you probably know, CD2 of Aerial is quite a lovely, relaxing countryside in summer sort of, you know, journey of music. But Aerial really gets intense as a track. It starts off lovely and quiet and she's singing away. And it builds up and builds up and builds up where she wants to, you know, fly up as a bird up into the sky. That's the whole vibe of the whole record. Apparently it was also shown on stage in Hammersmith, but it wasn't there. So I think that's my track number two. It's really, I do go to that track quite a lot when I'm just maybe...
Because Aerial was kind of one of her albums that wasn't critically acclaimed, or it had a lot of divided opinion, I think.
Oh, did it?
And possibly because it was, you know,
not 12 years
since she'd released something.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, maybe people...
Everyone thought she was dead.
Well, you know, she'd just kind of got married, had a baby, done all sorts of other things.
Normal stuff.
Yeah, had a life, and then came back with an album that was very different.
So you're number three? I'm so curious.
And actually, Aerial, that was the other thing I was going to mention.
Imagine.
Rolf Harris did some guest didgeridoo playing.
I know, it's a little bit terrifying when you kind of see that he's around, you're like, oof.
I know.
Who knew?
But at the time,
you know, who knew that he was going to be a creepy old man?
Yeah. No, anyway.
So, number three, Colin, are you ready for your number three?
Yeah, I think my final one will be off an album I didn't really like at all. I know I can't say that about a Cambridge album. 93, I was too busy being into house and techno music, and she kind of lost her buzz for me at that time, and I wasn't really sure. I don't think she really knew where she was going. She did a live video as well called The Line Across the Curve. I wasn't really doing that one. But a friend of mine did me a CD back in late 90s. Or cassette then it was, mix. And on that he put on, one of the tracks he put on there was...
So this is the album The Red Shoes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he put Moments of Pleasure on there.
Ooh.
And it was a really, really, really lovely, special track. And I'd never really listened to it because obviously I hadn't really listened to Red Shoes. I thought, oh my God, how did I miss out on that Kate Bush record?
Mm.
And that was really, really special.
Because the whole album is about like relationships and breakups, because she was breaking up with... Del Palmer, who she'd been with for years and years. So he was her producer as well. So she said...
Look, he's done some research.
I know. But, so he said, I saw the, you know, him talking about it, and he said, look, professionally we got along really well, but that would have been so hard for him to work with her knowing that their personal relationship was breaking up. And he said he thought it was some of her best music because it just came from so deep within her.
Wow.
And he said, I don't think people understood what was happening in her life because she, you know, she's not a public person.
Yep.
She wasn't about to say, hey, guess what, everyone? Guess what's happening?
Yeah.
So you had to listen to the album to really get into and know that, to understand why.
Yeah. So that was a really, really special track. And it was kind of like a rediscovery for me. And then I didn't really listen to the whole album till later. Still, the whole album doesn't really grab me, but it's nice to hear those special one-off tracks. You go, awesome. Yeah. I'm glad someone introduced that track back to me.
Yeah, because The Line, the Cross and the Sand is very trippy.
Yeah, not really what I'm into.
I saw a quote. Okay. I saw a quote that she'd said about it years later. It was about 10 years later. It was quote unquote. She thought it was a load of bollocks. She went, "There's about 4 minutes of it that I really like."
Hey, can I repick my third track?
Yes.
Can you repeat it?
No, repick.
Repick.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
go.
I'm kind of feeling like
just give us another one. Give us some more.
Go for it. But I feel like I need to talk a little bit about the two that we haven't talked about that I talked about because I just kind of went blah.
Yeah. So my third track will be
third/4.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
that's your job. You're the counter.
I think it's important to do Hello Earth from Hounds of Love.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, you know, it is kind of the end of the ninth wave CD, you know, side of the album. And I think it lets you recollect what's gone on in the last half an hour of your life, listening to the album. I think it lets you maybe hug someone you're with. It makes you just think about the world in general and have a moment to yourself. I think it's a really, really special track. It's only about 6 minutes long, but it's just wonderful.
Only. That is short for you.
This pop song is about 3, so yes, yeah. That's only.
Yeah, if it was on 50 Words for Snow, it'd be the shortest song in the album.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really beautiful song. And she, like, you know, it's if you understand the whole Ninth Wave album, it's kind of a sad thing as well, because the lady is stuck in the sea and she's saying bye to the earth.
Right.
So if you put it in that perspective, it's kind of a, you know,
wow, it's coming for now even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay, that's me.
All right. So
we can go back to talking.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm feeling dissed. No, not really dissed, but you know, feeling like I was just kind of like, oh my god, I'm just gonna get this out. So we were talking about I just kind of blurted my songs out. So Cloud Busting, if I had to pick between my three, that would kind of just be kind of close to the top. The reason that I like this is I always had a very special relationship with my dad, which sounds super creepy actually when I just heard that out loud.
No,
not
okay.
That sort of a special relationship. Dad just always made me feel like I could do anything I wanted in the whole entire world. So it just felt like he was kind of the wind beneath my wings. No, just felt like it was always encouraging. And because she's talking to her dad about that song and they're kind of working together on stuff, it just for me just feels like kind of a very, very uplifting song. The other thing, what?
You're getting all the glimpse.
I miss my dad. The other thing is the film clip is a full story.
So it's amazing, you're actually following...
Every film clip is a full story.
I know.
Or a whole story.
Yeah, no. Just, yeah, the whole story,
I see what you did there. Yeah.
Nice work. What was else I was going to say about it?
Do you find it quite an emotional song? I always get quite upset at the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
The other thing that I find is this is the song that if I'm not really concentrating, I'll actually find I'm singing to myself. So I'll be wandering around anywhere and I just start singing this song to myself. It's strange because I'll kind of go, oh, what are you? Oh, that's...
Yeah, because you're not an out loud singer.
I'm not an out loud singer.
Is it the yay, yay, yay?
No, it's actually the lyrics. It's like the, you know, cloud busting daddy and then kind of going through the pieces associated. I know, it's weird. But it's, weird, but that's what happens. And particularly if I hear it and then the next few days, it's kind of like one of those things that just, it's there. It's in my mind.
I actually closed one of my DJ sets in Iceland at the Blue Lagoon with cloud busting.
Oh, wow. That everyone, would have been amazing.
It was, everyone would loved
mixed
it.
Mixed it up. Yeah.
It's my last song.
I feel a little tingly just thinking about
I'll send you a link to that. It's on iTunes.
That would be awesome. Then Man with the Child in His Eyes, you've very beautifully articulated that, so I do not need to stop.
Which
about
I closed my
all.
First set of the Blue Lagoon with.
Think there's a theme.
Sing a theme here, yeah.
And then Wow for me is a very uplifting song.
It
so
is.
It's a very positive and kind of, and if anyone knows me for like 5 minutes, they know that that's kind of the vibe. I actually have been done an emotional intelligence test. Has anyone done an emotional intelligence test?
Not an official one?
Not this week.
I've done an official one and I came out as 98% positive and 99% optimistic. The person the person that read the test went, is that right? Actually, yes. That probably is.
Yes, it is. Person who wrote the test, yes, it is.
To the point where a little slight aside happened this week where I accidentally left my iPod. It's an old iPod, but it's only, you know, the little ones. It fell out of my pocket on the bus. And I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? This is terrible. I'll just see if I can find it. So I just called up, you know, and took 3 phone calls too. Hey, good on public transport in New South Wales. 3 phone calls and they've gone, yes, we've got it. It's gold, isn't it? And I said, yes, what? It is. And drove away and got picked it up.
Oh my God.
And everyone at work's going, oh wow. My God, that's because you're so positive that you would even try and find it.
It was the power of all the cake music that was on there.
Absolutely.
I got one word for you on that. Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. I got lots. Wow, 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 wow. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
When you listen to that song, though, do you find you get transported to like a dark theatre in the west end of London? There's not many people in there, and she's just practicing on stage or something. I get this visual straight away.
Do you? Okay. Oh. I don't get that visual.
Or if I'm in like a... I don't know, like the start of The Sound of Music and I'm spinning around on a big mountain going, what?
Actually, that's more for me. So for me, I feel
the opening of The Sound
fields,
of Music.
Grass fields, big open plains and just a release of just energy. So,
wow.
Yeah. Just you dark in studio somewhere.
But it is, yeah, it's just such an uplifting thing.
It is an
thing.
Uplifting.
So it's
great song.
All, yeah. It's not all sad.
What about the line about Vaseline? Not sure.
Not sure.
Yeah, too busy hitting the Vaseline. What is it?
Well, you know, there's bits, you know.
It's the 80s.
Yeah, it's the 80s.
Well, again, and there's songs about people. People do all sorts of things.
So I'm also a massive Peter Gabriel fan.
Don't give up.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love him, and I love the fact that he will try different things as well. So you can see there's kind of like a match between him and Kate.
Which is why the Fairlight thing. Like that came up through collaboration with him too.
Yeah,
that they almost,
definitely.
Almost, not almost invented it, but they were, you know, used it.
Yeah, you first instigators.
Yeah,
definitely. And so, yeah, Don't Give Up is the song that, it's quite an emotional song. So when you're listening to it, you just almost feel like you're going to burst into tears at any second, but it's also quite an uplifting song. So it's, yeah, it's one of those, it feels like it's contrasted in the whole thing, but their voices also together are just magic.
Yeah.
Magic.
On the whole story, No,
it's a serious song. It's a serious song.
It is a serious song.
Elton John actually said, he said, I don't think I've told you this before, Kate, when he was, you know, out of control and a complete alcoholic, he said this song, actually I listened to this song and went, I need to go and get help and do stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
isn't
he was
that the power of music though?
Yeah,
so it's a song
totally.
That can change.
Because he was
your
talking
life.
About that, and he also said, you know, I invited all these people to my wedding, and I invited Kate Bush, and I was when I went, they're not going to come, and they turned up, and he said all of these super famous people were going, oh my God, Kate Bush is here, I need to go and talk to her.
and she didn't make it.
Yeah, no, she turned up.
Oh, she turned up.
She turned up.
Oh, but she would do that because she still feels like she's somebody who'd be very polite.
But I think a lot of people have this thing about that song helped me in this period.
Yeah.
And Peter Gabriel was saying, you know, it's just her voice is soothing. It's like she's just put her arms around you and gone,
absolutely.
You know what?
Absolutely.
That's okay.
It's okay. We can work this through. Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's why that worked so well.
Yeah. I feel good now. I had to talk about that one.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, you know.
Can I talk about some of the others that I had on my list? Just really super quickly, because I broke the rules. Neil said I was allowed 3 songs, and so then I had like 9. But, you know, oh, that's nice. Thank you.
It's a bit hot in my wardrobe.
It's a little bit hot in Neil's wardrobe. So I also had Army Dreamers.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah. Because I think that's just, I don't know, it's an easy one to sing. And it's also not from Hounds of Love. I think they're all easy to sing. Probably, I probably sound like shit when I sing
Army
it.
Dreams is Never Forever.
Never Forever.
Yeah.
Running Up the Hill we've talked about, so I don't need to talk about. Breathing.
Mm. Well, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Love
out
that one. Look at that
breathing
out.
Out in intense, man.
Intense. But I always find that one calms me down if I'm feeling a bit anxious.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I like,
you like, approve.
Lucky. Well, as I said, there's no Kate Bush song.
No, there isn't.
That's rubbish.
That's rubbish.
Yeah.
And then the last one I had was Hounds of Love.
Yep.
I like the way that track Hounds of Love comes in straight after Running Up the Hill, because Running Up the Hill is such a massive track. But
yeah.
I think actually a good thing to talk about here is the way the set lists of the albums themselves as pieces of work flow.
Yeah.
Yes.
She does engage you. Yeah, she does engage you in a certain way. Look, overall, Hounds of Love is all the hits, and then Ninth Wave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But still, when Running Up the Hill fades out, he goes, in the trees, it's coming. Yeah. So she immediately gets you into track two.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And you're grabbed.
Yeah, yeah.
And you aren't going to go anywhere. You listen to this album from there, like, hit you around the head with it.
Yeah.
So, so it's quite interesting how she does the programming. And it's also with, I had that with the Dreaming.
Did she do that with Fish Records? No, that was
EMI. No. But it's also the same with the Dreaming. It closes off with, so I remember playing it, Get Out of My House. And I used to enact that out at home with my sister. But like, it's one of those songs which was, wow, as a kid. Wow. There's a donkey involved where it goes, Eeyore, Eeyore, right?
Yes, there's one with a donkey, yes.
You've got to talk about the donkey.
Oh, my God.
And you've
got to talk about the donkey.
Well, I think it's just her animal effects in general. I had a really amazing moment once. I was finished work and just, off work.
Oh, my God, is this about an animal? Oh, my God.
And I put Ariel CD2 in. I had half an hour spare, and I turned up the system at home. I had half an hour spare, do whatever, and... You know, I turned the lights off and put Ariel CD2 on and stuck it into PlayStation 3 Blu-ray player. And it projected an Earth thing on the screen, which was lovely. But what it did, it started playing the sounds on the Blu-ray player. And I suddenly hear it more clearly than hearing it on iTunes.
Okay.
But I realised all the bird noises were human and it was her.
Ooh, freaky.
And I went... Oh my God, it's actually her.
Did you realise that the three of the songs you've talked about and this one now are all bird related? So I'm wondering whether birds are like your spirit animal or something.
Well, Ariel is a whole bird theme going on.
Very fascinating.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I like to see themes when there's none.
she did that with me last week when we were talking about musicals. She psychoanalyzed my song choices.
So, I mean, obviously...
I have no idea what that means. Just curious.
But also, I do like, only last few years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, I finally... And this is what I like about her music. You suddenly discover things.
Yes.
And I guess, I know we have reverted, but talked about the Dreaming quite a bit tonight because it is that difficult album for a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm.
But the cover was her on the front with her mouth open with a gold key on her tongue.
Mm.
And it was linked to the track Houdini on the album.
Mm. Yes.
I never knew that.
Oh, wow.
And then I re-listened to it by chance 4 years ago or something like that. And I suddenly realised, you know, wow, that was it.
Mm.
It's the Houdini. You know, it was like eureka moment. Yeah, but...
Because you can only see a little touch of gold on her tongue, and then you realise that she's got the key in her mouth and about to kiss him with the key.
And the guy in the picture is Del Palma.
Oh,
is it?
Yeah.
Man. But you can't see he's got a hand over his face. All the magicians in the world have just cried. You've released my secret.
But, you know, I've been listening to the album or seen the cover since I was, like, 1981, you know, 82. Oh,
vividly.
And never realised
the connection or what it was or what it was all about. So that's quite an experience. You go, wow. Well,
she's left an indelible mark on your heart, hasn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Good old Kate Bush.
Yeah, she's great.
Yes.
Thank you, Shirley.
Yes. It's funny how your siblings influence your musical taste.
Yes, you do.
Especially if they're older, like I've got five older
siblings. I've got three older siblings.
Oh, have you? Wow. That's what Kate said. He's the middle child.
Yes.
Yeah, she did say that. He's quick, this Colin, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Shall we have a little, I think it's important to have a little bit of Neil and quirky moment. I think, let's talk about some of the quirky things Kate Bush does. My first quirky thing I want to talk about is how she talks about everyday things in her songs.
Yes.
So, my number one is Mrs. Bartola Lozzi's song talks about washing and writes a whole song about it.
Why not? Who doesn't want to sing about washing? Obviously not many people.
What other artists could get away with singing a song about washing?
Yeah. What other quirky things have you got, Colin? Because you're like the encyclopedia of Kate Bush.
Well, I think it was interesting that on 50 Words from Snow, the song 50 Words from Snow was just a famous comedian in the UK talking about...
Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry.
Famous comedian in the world.
Talking about words that describe snow.
Yeah.
Because I saw him interviewed as well about that too, and he'd said, so, you know, Kate Bush wants you to do something on her next album. And he said, of course, you know, it's Kate Bush. She does know that I can't sing, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
No, they just want you to speak.
I can speak.
Yeah, sure.
His voice is quite nice as well.
Oh, it's lovely.
Got a lovely voice. It's very smooth.
But they mix it in so well with the stuff in the...
And she counts it down too. I was actually listening to it today on the way in. to work. And she counts it down as well, which adds the lyrical component to it. So it's kind of fun.
Mm.
13 to go.
I know, if we revert back to the kick inside, I mean, when you first hear that combination of the way moving goes into the saxophone song, the two tracks were mixed. That was kind of unusual at the time when it came out. Mm. And again, she's got you into track two already.
Yeah.
So moving, this is all about me. And she talks about, you know, her mimey, dramery vibe going on. Yeah. And then she's, and then
it's a thing.
And then totally. That merges into the saxophone song, which is already track two.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no, she's got me. And you just carry on with the whole album.
Yeah.
And I think that's really special. That's really cool and different.
Which is really, really different to, especially, you know, late 70s, 80s, where it was just, write two really good songs and
whack it on, the rest can be
shit. You know, just put seven other shit songs on and hope that you'll buy the album and, you know.
Yeah, fans do that, though.
But as I said, everything is crafted. Everything is very deliberate. Everything is thought out to the nth degree. And, you know, if you don't like it, to her, that's immaterial.
Yeah.
It's her telling her story.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Because she does it with such passion and incredible talent, of course you like it.
I'm reminded of another artist, David Bowie, who would do that as well. So he would craft everything, the stage shows, costumes, everything as well. It's a similar sort of way. Maybe not to the degree, but similar.
Yes.
But this is all about Kate Bush, so let me just...
We'll have another David Bowie.
We'll have another David Bowie. My brother's actually said, please have me as the guest. We can talk about David Bowie. I said, okay, I'll make a note.
Sure.
Noted.
We'll put you on the list, Dwayne.
Anything else you want to share,
you want
Colin?
Any other quirky things?
I think...
last chance, then we talk Wuthering Heights and we're out of here.
Look, I have a special place in my heart with that 7-inch single she released, December Will Be Magic.
Yes.
Ah, yeah.
It's not in any compilations.
I didn't even know about this until
it's a non-album single.
Oh, wow. Non-album single.
But it wasn't a thing in Australia.
No.
It was only I think it was only a UK release, probably.
1980.
That's what I mean.
It didn't come to Australia.
If it wasn't on Countdown, we didn't see
it. But it did come to Germany and Ireland, so.
Okay, good.
It's a really, really lovely, lovely song. And the cover was, I always remember my sister had the cover of it on 7-inch. And like there was like probably somewhere.
Worth a fortune.
There was a line on the front, like, doing a sleigh. Like, December Will Be Magic. Wonderful Christmas song. Very, very, you know, Christmassy.
Christmassy.
And her voice was on top form.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the B-side was.
Her voice is always on top form, except for that one moment.
And it was very, you know, there was like sleigh bells on there and like talk about snow and things like that. Kind of a prelude to 50 Words.
It was for snow, really. That's where
it was born. It was very English. It was very, you know.
Very English.
Top of the Pops Christmas Day kind of record.
You do love your Christmas albums. Christmas.
They love them over there. But it's a real shame you can't really get it anymore. I've looked everywhere for it on iTunes and stuff. Even hard to get a copy or look at the video clip anywhere.
But your sister still has it on vinyl?
She's got a 7-inch vinyl, I'm sure, somewhere.
So I think you just steal it. That's the rule.
Yeah.
Shirley, I'm coming for it.
Shirley, we're all coming over to get that.
For sure.
It's a very, I mean, and that's the quirkiness of Kate Bush, you know, you have these weird and wonderful
tracks.
Why not
release something that you can't buy? Yeah, that's a great move. Which it is, because now it's desperately wanted.
Yeah.
So.
Which again would not be some marketing thing she's created.
She would have just gone out.
I can't be, whatever.
So I think we really want to just finally talk about Wuthering Heights, don't we?
Because it is a great song.
I mean, I've got a real, we love that song. We have the Wuthering Heights Day now globally every September. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I love it.
Melbourne had 2,000 people.
Yeah. I think we're
so
next
awesome.
Year. I'm prepared
we should
to
totally
get.
Go.
I'll put the red dress on and
yes,
do it.
Yes, let's do it. I'm there.
Although, you know, there's two versions of the video clip, but anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just being
but the red dress one. Anyway. Yes. So, Wuthering Heights, talk to me.
I like it. I love it. It's a good song. It's not my favourite.
Oh, I felt a butt there.
It's not my favourite out of all of them. I think because it came out when I was only about 7 or even earlier. What year was it actually? What year was it?
So it was on the kicking side February 78.
So I was 6.
So it was.
So
yeah,
it wasn't
7,
really hitting me yet.
7, 8,
I was more a little bit later. That's why I think the Dreaming impacted me so much. I was a little bit older.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously with the vinyl record in front of me.
But again, we were talking before that you go back and revisit it and you can hear a different story each time you listen to it when you're older and different life experiences. Suddenly, songs that didn't mean anything suddenly mean something to you.
Well, part of my little Kate Bush journey, though, in life was you hear the hits and you hear them Top of the Pops and all that. But because my older siblings were buying albums, I got to a point where suddenly I discovered an album and went, oh, it's not just that song.
Yeah.
It's suddenly there's all the other songs. Yeah. Like hearing Moving Saxophone Song and Kick Inside, I remember the first time I went, oh my God, there's loads more records than just that one.
Yeah. The one that
and I was like, I wasn't really caught computing what was going on here.
What do you mean there's 10 songs on one thing and you're just listening to one of them?
Yeah. So that's quite an education for me from the music side of things more so.
So my Wuthering Heights story is that if you get my husband, so Trev, who does the
editing.
Hi, Trev. And you get my brother, Dwayne, together and you ply them with a little bit of alcohol, they will sing Wuthering Heights to each other and dance and do all of the movements associated with it.
Wow.
It's hilarious. So
it's
one
liturgical dance.
I know, absolutely. So interpretive dance is just beautiful. So at a 30th birthday, they were inside not realizing that everyone was watching them singing and dancing to Wuthering Heights at the highest pitch voice they could possibly do. Oh my God. Dear. So when I think of Wuthering Heights, that's the image that goes into my head. And it
I don't
is
think I
hysterical.
Want that image in my head anymore.
Oh my gosh, both, it's so funny. No, it's so good. They're just so in love with it. Like they're just completely engulfed in the song. They wouldn't even know if anyone was looking at them. That's what's so beautiful about it. Magic. Can you imagine it?
I can't imagine it.
And Neil doesn't want to imagine it.
No, I can't imagine it anymore.
It is good.
It is fantastic. As I said, and just because it's also a song about a book.
And it's
so different. And again, it's not the same. No. It's not a formula. It's just
heartfelt.
You know, she obviously really loved this book and thought, hey, let's just turn that into something.
Yeah.
And turned it into something fantastic. And again, she was only, 19 years old
when
she wrote all of that. So, just incredible.
I have my own story where, like, you know, I've heard, you know, I had the live concert and you just hear her sing it live as well. It's not just pre-recorded. It's live. And she's done that 2 hours, 21-year-old, killing it at London. And the whole crowd's just up in arms going crazy for that last song, Wuthering Heights. And her voice just cracks slightly. But it's just so special. And you're going, good on you.
Did it crack with emotion?
I think it was a combination.
Okay.
The concert tour was sold out around the UK.
She did a lot of,
and,
tours.
Bearing in mind, she sort of led the way with the whole, you know, full stage show with outfit changes, dances.
Were you
before the Madonnas and the Gagas and the Pinks did anything, what I mean? So she kind of led the way. She also led the way with the radio mics as well, so she could dance and sing.
Even the different tracks, so the way that you lay down track upon track upon track upon track, she was also kind of a trailblazer in that.
Yeah,
as well,
absolutely. So. Totally agree. Yeah. So she's very, very amazing lady.
Yeah.
Amazing. So quite inspiring for everyone, you know?
Yes.
And that's why it's really important that, like,
imagine an entire stadium singing Wuthering Heights.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, that would just be magical.
It was funny, actually. Many, many Moons friends I've met over the years, and you find out they're closet Kate Bush fans. And it was, like, so funny. Like, it was like, how much would you... And when you find out over drinks and dinner
or whatever,
and you sort of go, how much would you pay? And it was like, I'd pay £1,000.
£1,000?
And you talk about this sort of stuff. And, like, when it actually happened, it was like, everyone suddenly got a bit stunned. And why they got stunned, I think, because you kind of get worried that you might get disappointed.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, not that
it
we
won't
don't
be as good as you think it'll be.
But then
you set the bar a bit too high.
Yeah,
in your imagination.
Because there's been so much hype and waiting with her throughout her career.
Yeah, that she's going to come out and be Meatloaf or something.
Oh.
Sorry, Kate, we don't want to wish that on anyone.
No.
But that's the thing. And there was a lot of that worry in the back end. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and also it's so hard to get tickets as well.
Yeah.
And then when it came out and it was stunning and amazing and everything and actually killed it.
Yeah.
It's like,
so excited.
Wow. You know, I've got programs in that. Which thank you guys for giving those programs to me. And, you know, we've
awesome.
As part of it, you know, again, to the artistry of her, like during the night of the event, pieces of tissue paper came out, flying out into the crowd, and it had little bits of poetry on them. That much detail. I've got the bits.
You showed me. I was so excited. I have touched a piece of poetry.
I mean, that's the sort of detail that went to.
So it's not just your usual bullshit glitter that falls from the ceiling.
Although I do love a good glitter bomb,
let's face it.
And the program went into detail how they prepared the whole show and how it's worked. So you sort of go.
Every detail is thought about. Yeah. It's the
she was really concerned. She was really concerned.
Because she's quite shy and quite
meek and mild.
Yeah.
You know.
And her voice is also a speaking voice. She's so shy and quiet.
I just want to do it.
That's why I think she, when she becomes a character, that's okay. And she can be anything. And that's. That's her release. That's her thing.
Well, so, congratulations, Kate, on releasing your new album.
We're very, very excited.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, very excited.
I'm very excited for the album. Can't wait to hear it in a dark room on the Boz system, very loud.
Yeah.
Experience it.
Crank it.
Yeah, crank it up. Go for the whole emotions.
It'd be a little bit better if there was a world tour and you came to Australia.
Well,
that's the other thing too.
You'll never do that.
We were saying before, but it's not just the music. It's the visual, it's the show, it's the theatre.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing that goes with it.
But I think also, though, if it's that good and that special and it's the one theatre she's got connection with, people will fly to her.
I'll fly there, yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, damn, fly there.
Fly there and watch it. Yes, I would. Okay.
Thank you, Colin Gaff.
Thank you for coming and
thank you very much,
sharing
guys.
Something very personal awesome. With you.
It's awesome.
We feel so educated now. Feel like we're in a
Kate-educated.
In a little Kate Bush bubble.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much, Colin Gaff. Thank you, Crookie.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Shanil.
We will see you next time for our December podcast, which will be. We've talked about the fact that Christmas isn't a big thing. Oh, you know, Christmas is so overdone. We're not doing top Christmas songs. Nah. We're doing songs about food and alcohol.
But you know what, guys? May be magic.
December may be magic. Oh, magic. Isn't that so perfect?
Or will it be magic?
Ooh. We'll leave it there with that mystery.
Thank you, everyone. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.